Where the Bodies Are Buried contains graphic depictions of violence that some listeners may find disturbing. Discretion is advised.
Forget what you've heard about serial killers. Forget the movies, podcasts, and stories in the media of infamous psychopaths like Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy. I'm going to show you what exists beyond all of that, and you will hear from the source, the killers themselves. This is Where the Bodies Are Buried.
That devil is on my side.
My name is Phil Chalmers. For over 35 years, I've dedicated my life to communicating with and studying hundreds of serial killers, teen killers, school shooters, and mass murderers. I help solve cold cases, locate bodies, and bring closure to hurting families of the victim. Joining me is my wife, Wendy, and my producers, Adam and Samantha.
Samantha, you ready?
Yep.
All right, we're rolling.
One, two, all right.
Let's jump into Clyde Gibson.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from...
William Gibson.
An inmate at the Indiana State Prison.
On this episode of Where the Bodies Are Buried, esteemed serial killer profiler Phil Chalmers speaks with William Clyde Gibson, who's currently serving life at Indiana State Prison for killing three people. He discusses his reign of terror over two decades and dozens of other murders, including the slaying of his mother's 75-year-old best friend for walking in on him, chopping up a corpse. You'll witness how Phil gains Clyde's trust in the hopes of getting another confession.
This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Hey, Master. Man, you're hard to get a hold of.
You know, if I don't answer, you keep calling. William Gibson we're talking to here, but his nickname is Clyde. You're in prison for multiple murders. First of all, tell us why you're in prison and what your sentence is.
I got two death sentences and one 65-year sentence, and they're all for murders, for hacking them up, mutilation, cutting their breasts off, eating parts that shouldn't be eaten, stuff like that. I mean, just treacherous stuff. I'm where I belong. I know that.
What was your childhood like? A lot of people think serial killers, that when they grow up, they kill animals and set fires, and they have really bad families, but you didn't quite have that, did you?
I don't fit any of their profiles. I've never been through the animals, never set fires, no kind of self-mutilation or none of that stuff. I don't know. I don't fit the profile in any of that. As a matter of fact, I tell you a little story about when I was a little kid. I was sitting on the sidewalk behind our house, and my mom was going in and out with the laundry. And I was watching these little ants on the sidewalk, and she was stepping on them, and I called her a murderer. And that was like, you know, before anybody ever told me about stuff like that. I don't know. I don't know what caused me to do what I did. I just did it because I wanted to, I guess.
Yeah, that's the next question I have. How do you get from your bouncing baby boy to being on death row? Do you ever think, how in the hell did I end up here?
Yeah, all the time. All the time. I'm here because I did the things I wanted to do that I knew wasn't right. I couldn't explain to you why I did it, Phil, except for the fact that I did it because I wanted to.
Were you more driven by sex, anger, or robbery?
Well, the robbery thing did come into play. I could rob a person without killing them. The first murder I ever committed was for money, and it was overseas. And it seemed like after that, it just kind of got good to me. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. There were times in my childhood growing up, I thought about what it'd be like to kill somebody. And that was at a pretty early age, but I never, ever thought that I'd actually do it.
So you're in prison for three murders, but how many murders have you committed?
Well, I know I killed 33.
What we see typically is serial killers have always killed more people than the police know about. And Clyde Gibson has admitted to killing 33 people. He's only convicted of three murders. There's 80,000 to 100,000 unsolved murders in this country. And so the reason why I started talking to serial killers is because I knew they killed more people than the police knew about, and I wanted to get them to talk to me. They will confess to unsolved murders.
I've also shot people from a distance that I could have killed them and maybe not. I'd go to the project and just sniper shoot people because they used to always blame it on a rival gangs and shit over in Louisville, Kentucky.
And how many times you think you did that?
I know I at least shot at people at least 20 times. I don't know. You know, I never really kept up with the news on what happened afterwards.
In your 40s, you killed Karen Hodella. Did you kill anybody before Karen Hodella? Karen is one of three unfortunate victims Clyde was convicted of murdering.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about your first murder in the United States. How old were you and what happened?
I would say it was in 82.
You are 25 years old. Okay, so what happens?
Most of the people that I killed were just bar flies. I mean, that's the nicest way I can put it. They were just tramps. I don't know how to put it any other way. That's the way Karen was. And that's one of the reasons I killed her. I killed her because she cheated on her husband with me. That's weird to say, but it's the truth.
You told me a story about Karen Hodella where you met her at a bar and she was with her husband. Tell us how that goes down, Clyde.
The story of how Clyde killed this poor woman is absolutely brutal. You've told it to me before. Why have him retell it? I would assume you're trying to get him to feel more comfortable, maybe open up a little bit more.
Yes, I am growing closer to Clyde Gibson, and he is starting to open up about some of the details of these crimes. And I know if I stay with him long enough, he's going to confess to not only one cold case, but we're hoping to get 15 to 30 cold case confessions.
In a moment, Clyde is going to describe some details that are so gruesome and graphic. Because of this, we chose to bleep out some of the most disturbing descriptions.
Well, I'm sitting there at the bar by myself, just drinking, having fun. And all at once, this little chick shows up and she's talking to me and wanting to go out and stuff. And her husband comes up. Of course, I didn't know who it was at the time, but he came up on the other side of me and said, "Hey, man, that's my old lady you're talking to." I said, "Look, she's coming on to me. I didn't start this." While he's standing there, she's whispering in my ear that after she takes him to work, she'll be back. That was the last time she seen him.
Did you know when she came back that she would die that night?
Well, I had a pretty good idea that was her last night on Earth. Well, I did some really sick, twisted shit with her. She was taking a bunch of pills, and I asked her to share with me, and she said she wasn't going to share. So I just pulled my pocket knife out of my pocket and stabbed her in her neck, right? When I hit her right in her jugular vein. Just instantly, it just started squirting blood. She mumbled out a no, but that was it. After I killed her, I cut the of her off and cut her out. It was pretty disgusting.
Do you have sex with her dead body?
A couple times, yes. Wore around on my fingers. Sick shit. I mean, I'm a twisted person.
I am listening to this stuff, and I'm trying to have thick skin and be like, okay, what are the facts? But ultimately, it's terrifying.
Yeah, like these are images you cannot get out of your head. Do you try to keep emotion out of this? Is it hard to do that?
A lot of people ask me how I do this and how do I sleep at night. It's my calling. It's my purpose. This is what I was born to do. So I don't get emotional about it. I'm very aggressive, but you have to play their game. Did you ever take any trophies, Clyde, from your victims, like driver's license, jewelry, or just body parts?
I took a few driver's licenses. As a matter of fact, I think they found some in my mom's garage when they searched that place. I think they found a finger bones or something in there, too.
What do you feel like when you're in the midst of committing this crime? Are you excited? Does it give you a sense of power?
All of the above.
Is it exciting?
It was for me, but I'm sure it wasn't for them. But yeah, I mean, it just gives you a sense of empowerment. You're invincible and you can do anything. The thing about it was, I'd done this shit so many times. The ways I got away with it was stuff that shouldn't have never happened. I've had so many stupid-ass close calls where I should have been arrested. I should have been arrested 2 decades ago. It happened to me all the time.
Phil, how is it that these guys can get away with murder for such a long time?
So the serial killers have a couple things going on. Number one, they kill strangers. And number two, a lot of them kill outside of the area where they live. So Clive, we know for a fact that when you killed Karen Hodell in 2002, and you got arrested for killing Stephanie Kirk and Christine Wittes in 2012, the three people you were convicted of murdering, and you told them you killed many, many more, and they continue to say Clyde Gibson is lying.
No, I'd say it was pretty much a routine I had. It was usually about one a month, something like that.
And so between 2002, Karen Hodella, and 2012, Stephanie Kirk, that's 10 years. How many do you think you killed in that 10-year span?
Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe at least 15. There's so many names that run together. It's crazy.
What states, what areas do you think these victims are from?
Oh, they're from all over. I mean, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana. One girl I picked up was from Colorado.
So the typical MO of Clyde Gibson is you meet someone in a bar and you take them home.
Right.
What do you prefer? Do you kill them in your home or do you kill them in your truck?
Well, usually in a stolen vehicle.
So you normally don't bring them home and kill them. That's pretty rare when you do that, right?
Right. Well, the only reason that I killed Stephanie there at the house was just because my mother was in the hospital.
What year did your mother die?
My mother died in 2012.
Wow, so that's right at the time of Stephanie Kirk and Christine Wittes. So now you have the house to yourself, correct?
Right.
So you have to sit in prison thinking to yourself, if I would have got rid of Christine Wittes' body, I may not be in here, correct?
I wouldn't be in here, but you know, it'd be to the demise of a bunch more people.
Right.
It's like I told you and Wendy before, I'm more of a mom. You know, I got no problem with it. They could execute me tomorrow and wouldn't say nothing.
You've told me before that you welcome execution, you welcome death. What would be your last statement?
I don't really, nothing other than the fact that I'm getting what I deserve.
At the same time, if they cut you loose today, you think you would still kill?
Yeah.
When I'm on death row talking to these killers, I kind of keep in mind who I'm talking to. I never forget that. They all say they're not remorseful most of the time, and they say, release me today and I'll kill again. I mean, so nothing's changed with them.
And Clyde Gibson is definitely the kind of guy who goes, I 100% should be here. I should be put to death.
Yes. One of the rare ones that says, I'm where I need to be. I'm a sick bastard. I want to die.
When I heard him go into detail, especially with like mutilating, you know, victims' bodies after they were already deceased, to me, that was very difficult to hear. And as a woman, the things that go through my head are, you know, it raises fear. It raises questions of, oh my gosh, how do you avoid becoming a victim for one of these guys? Like, these are the things that come up for me as a woman when I hear any of these guys talk.
There hasn't been a major research project on serial killers since the 70s and 80s. I'm doing this. I'm talking to hundreds and hundreds of serial killers, more than anybody else. And I think we need to have a better understanding of who these new killers are, because a lot of people don't know who they are. We're stuck in the 70s. We're stuck on Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, Joe Wayne Gacy. And we got to come to this decade because serial killers have changed dramatically. So I have a few calls scheduled this week with Clyde Gibson. Every time I talk to him, I try to squeeze more information out of him. I'm going to start to now tell him I need his help. I've helped him a little bit. Now he needs to help me. And he's hinted that he wants to start talking about some of these cold cases. And then I'm going to talk to Detective Jeff Topping, who was at his arrest, and see what Detective Topping has to say about the case.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from
William Gibson,
an inmate at the Indiana State Prison.
What's up, Clyde? How you doing?
Nothing. I'm doing good.
Clyde Gibson has admitted to killing 33 people. He's only convicted of three murders. He killed a 75-year-old family friend, and he gave them a murder 10 years earlier because he wanted to show them that I've been killing for at least a decade. And then he gave them another murder, a woman who was buried in his backyard. They didn't even believe she was there, but they found her. And he said, you'd think I've only killed three. I've killed a lot more than that. So you'd gotten in trouble. You came back to the U.S. You lived in Indiana, I assume. And what did you do?
Well, I went back to work for the power company doing line clearing, just cutting trees out of power lines, stuff like that. I did it the whole time I was married to my wife. Right after I got out of Leavenworth, me and her got married.
How long were you married to her for?
We was married till 94. She divorced me when I was in prison over in Kentucky.
So you were married 14 years. How did you get along with her? Did you have a normal marriage? What was it like?
We had a perfectly normal relationship, other than the fact that I drank a lot, and she would complain about that. But every time I got in trouble, she would blame it on my drinking.
You had normal relationship. You had normal sex with her. Nothing out of the ordinary. You didn't try to choke her. Nothing funny like that.
No.
You were married, but then you were out killing other people.
Right. She never had no clue about it. I mean, it was just funny. I mean, even my mom, the only one that really had a clue about it was my sister. My sister actually told me I had a dream that you cut some woman's throat and had to go to prison. Ain't that weird?
Wow.
She told me about that dream. It wasn't too long after I had cut Karen Hodella's throat.
Before they're caught, a lot of these guys are just living normal lives in plain sight, having somewhat normal relationships. You never really know someone. And until they're caught, I'm sure a lot of people in their lives were shocked.
A lot of people are shocked. They don't look like killers. They don't talk like killers. They don't act like killers. These guys live pretty normal lives. I mean, BTK, I mean, that's a perfect thing. Yeah. Church president, Boy Scout leader, married his high school sweetheart. These guys are dangerous. Is there any other unsolved cases where there's people that they know their names? Is there any other big cases where people were looking for victims?
Yes. I want to come clean with a lot of them. There's some of them that I don't even remember exactly where they're at, but I'm going to try.
I want to help you solve these cases, bring closure. There's a lot of families probably that wonder what happened to their loved ones, and be kind of a good way for you to go out is to just wrap all these things up.
Right. I understand that. I'm not completely inhuman. I do have a few good qualities. I would never harm a child or none of that stuff.
I just interviewed a guy from Illinois who kills little kids. What is your take on that?
Well, I would like to cut his head off. And we got one that's in here, that one I was telling you about. You might be able to write about him one day if I ever get a chance to get him. This dude put a road flare in a little kid's pants and set the house on fire with this road flare in a little kid's pants. A five-year-old little boy and a sister was so scared she hid in the closet and died of smoke inhalation. The shit that I done is bad enough, but when you mess with a little kid that's got the rest of his life,
yeah,
it just irritates me. I deserve to be executed. I've got no qualms with it. But this guy killed little kids and thinks he shouldn't be executed.
He has his own moral compass, it seems. He has done all these horrible things, but he draws a line. And I just find that fascinating that someone who's done such horrible things does have a moral compass of his own. What's your understanding?
There is no understanding. I mean, there's a moral hierarchy, like, oh my gosh, child killers, I would strangle them if I got my hands on them on death row. Yet he's killed 33 people, right, and done some crazy things. But he loves his cat. He has a cat on death row, and he wants us to get it adopted so it doesn't have to spend its life on death row. Clyde, do you have remorse for any of your crimes?
Really just one, Chris.
The older lady. Do you ever think about any of the victims?
Yeah. Absolutely. I relive a lot of them.
Hey, Jeff, you here?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Detective Jeff Topping was one of the police officers who arrested Clyde Gibson. Hey, Jeff, what was your job? Who did you work for how long?
I worked for the Floyd County Sheriff's Department for over 20 years.
Let's go back before William Clyde Gibson is arrested. What do you know about him before the murders?
He liked to steal cars.
Were you surprised Clyde was a serial killer?
Yes.
For sure, Clyde Gibson has killed 3 people. He's a serial killer.
Yes.
He claims he's killed 33. Some law enforcement think he's only killed 3, and some thinks he may have killed more. What is your thought?
I think if you start in 2002... you don't wait until 2008, 10, 12, and then just start up again. I do believe that he's killed others. I don't know how many. There's a couple people it's missing that he's probably had involvements in. Do I believe 30-something? I don't know.
He's on death row. Obviously, he's never going to get out. He's not really remorseful. He said he deserves execution. Does it make you realize as a detective, as a police officer, that killers could be anybody?
Yes. I mean, it shocks you. I just hope he don't wait until the last minute to try to strike a deal and it's too late, like Ted Bundy. He could have some valuable information to solve other crimes. I don't know if he'll die with all the information or if he'll break down and use some credible information that may help us.
That's our struggle. That's our challenge, right? Like, we know Ted Bundy went to the grave. He probably killed 100 people. And he went to the grave with that information. Our goal is to try to get him to talk. And you know, when you're dealing with a psychopathic serial killer, it is like walking on eggshells. And we're hoping now that he's going to come clean. So, Jeff, we will let you know if he does. And you're always the first person I call. We're hoping he's going to lead us to multiple bodies. You've always been great. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, thank you.
Christine Whitus comes to your house, your last victim. And how does that go down?
Well, they say that I called her, but I don't remember calling her. I didn't have to coach her over. I could have went to her house anytime I wanted to. I could have went to her house. I'd been over many times.
This is your mom's friend. She's 75 right. years old, right?
Right. After her husband died, we actually had sex together. It was a mutual thing. I never told nobody, and she never told nobody.
Why did she come to your house that day?
I guess just to check on me, because she had been doing that ever since my mom passed away, and just so happened that I had another body there just from an old bar fly. I didn't know her, just killed her, and I was cutting her up. I had her on plastic.
How did you kill her? Same way, strangulation?
Yep. I loaded her in the van. I took her to the river.
So when you were in the midst of cutting her up, that's when Christine Whitus came over and stumbled across her body. Is that how it went?
Right. But after I killed Chris, I used her van to take that body away.
And then what did you do with Chris's body?
Well, I stuffed her in the garage after I cut her breast off, or one of them, and put it in my pocket and took it with me. The van was clean because she was all wrapped up in plastic, and I threw her in the river. But Christine, I put her in the garage after I'd done all the stuff I was going to do with her. Then I went up to Hooters, and I was still in her van. And when I came back home, I stayed out too long. I was getting drunk, right? And I was knowing that I needed to get Chris out of there and get rid of her, right? Mm-hmm. Do something with her body. But I got so drunk, I let time get past me, and it was like 2 o'clock, somewhere around there.
And again, Detective Jeff Topping.
Well, it started out, I was notified by the city they'd done a homicide at Gibson's residence, where he would stand at his mother's residence, and that they was looking for him. And supposedly there'd been several sightings of him in a van that belonged to the victim.
Yeah, go ahead. Keep telling the story.
I was driving back in her van, and the cops were all around the house, and I took off. And they chased me down.
I talked to the chief of detectives at the New Albany City, and they gave me a description. And one of the city officers had spotted him and got in a pursuit. And I come in the Walmart parking lot on the north end, and they come in on the south end. And I come at him head on and forced him to stop. He was sitting in the driver's seat, and he had something in the console. He was fooling with something in the console, and we had told that he might be armed. And it ended up being one of Whitus's breasts that he had cut off what he was fooling with.
You're not thinking he's a serial killer of 33 people. You're just thinking, oh my God, Clyde's gone too far?
Yeah, we didn't know why he had done it.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from
William Gibson.
Anything you like to say to the victims' families if they listen to this?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't do no good to say you're sorry or none of that shit, because for most of them, I'm really not. I'm just being honest. I'm not going to lie about it. I did it because I could. There's no reasoning behind it. Most everybody wants to know why. There is no reason why. There's no reason to do that to anybody. I don't care what anybody says. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm exactly where I should be. I'll tell you that. There's no question about it. I don't think I'm such a terrible person. I'm not a good person. I love animals. That's not another one. The profile on that kind of stuff for me is completely wrong.
Right.
If a person was to meet me in a bar, you would never know that I'm like I am. Nobody would. anybody would be susceptible to me attacking them. You know what I mean? Really.
So when I walk outside, I might be walking into a freaking serial killer?
There's at least 100 serial killers moving around right now. You've definitely... And you're in California? You bumped into serial killers. In L.A.?
I'm always wondering on a daily basis, like, are you a serial killer?
You never know. But once the lion decides to kill you, you're done. Clyde, where are most of the victims from? Where do your victims come from?
They are a mixture of everything, Phil. It's just dumb luck. It was bad luck for them. Well, a lot of them, like the Elizabeth Bannister, she was just happened to be one of the unlucky ones, you know. Just a stupid thing of the way we met.
How did you meet her?
She was walking down the street, and I picked her up and took her home. She had just a regular little house there.
That was a confession. That is what we're shooting for. That's what our goal is. And they may just mention it or breeze over it, but once we get that, I immediately whip out my computer and say, is there such a person as Elizabeth Bannister missing? What are the details on this case? And then we quickly realize, you know, we research, can he have done this? And guess what? There was an Elizabeth Bannister. It is in his area. She used to live in New Albany, his hometown. And we realized that this is real. It's legit. So listen, man, call me tomorrow afternoon.
I'm going to give you a call tomorrow, okay?
Thanks, bro.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from...
William Gibson.
An inmate at the Indiana State Prison.
Here's what I want to ask you, Clyde. Are you positive you killed Elizabeth Bannister in Evansville, Indiana, which was a very high-profile case?
Yes.
Elizabeth Bannister is a cold case murder that dates back 20 years. So we know the details of the case. We know that Elizabeth was killed inside of her home, which was split up into little apartments. We know she was stabbed to death. We also know that the perpetrator escaped without being seen. My next step now is to talk to William Clyde Gibson and to see what he has to say about the case and see if his story matches up with the story the media released. A lot of your crimes have to run together. How do you know of her specifically?
Well, I just remember, but just mainly because of what she looked like.
How do you know that was her name, though?
Well, she told me her name when I first met her, and I just remember.
Okay.
There's a lot of details I don't remember just because of the time. There's so many other people that I killed. It's hard to keep it all in line.
Was it a big case? Like, was it on the news and stuff?
Well, you know, I don't really know because I went back to New Orleans, so we don't get much news down there. You know what I mean?
Walk me through it. You're literally from the very beginning moment you laid eyes on Elizabeth Bannister, where, how, I mean, walk me through the whole story until you left.
Well, like I said, I just seen her on the side of the road waving her hands and shit. Just went in a ride. I picked her up.
And then you know that
went from there.
You picked her up and you took her to her house, right?
Right. As far as what I can remember, I mean, like I said, I was stoned. What I tell you might not be exactly correct, but I remember a great big mirror or something breaking. I'm pretty sure of that.
Okay.
But it was like a big apartment type building or something, like a house, but it was a bunch of apartments. So that's what it seemed like to me. It was nighttime when we went.
Yep.
I don't recall that much of it.
And did you kind of walk into the apartment with her?
There was other people around, too. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, it was incognito type stuff. I mean, you know, they was outside and shit, but it was just weird. I mean, the shit happened like that to me many times where I should have been caught, you know?
Right.
I just killed her and pretty much left. I didn't hack her up that bad. Just stabbed her up.
You stabbed her?
Mm-hmm.
So you're just like, I kind of have the feeling, I think I can kill this girl. I'm going to follow her in and do this.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it works. That's how I did most of them. I mean, I just go out with that mindset, and that's what ended up happening. I never knew exactly who it was going to be, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Do you remember stabbing her, and where'd you stab her, and how many times?
If I sit around and think about it for a while, it might come back to me. I see it in my mind. You know what I mean?
When you left, did anybody see you leave?
Well, I wasn't really paying attention, but I'm sure that people did see me leave.
You got the hell out of there, got in your truck, and went home.
Yeah.
And the family's been searching for the killer for a long time, and they are going to be very, very excited. There's a younger sister. Her life has been destroyed, and I can't wait to call her and tell her.
You're talking about a call that I don't know if anyone out there listening would ever want to make.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
You have to be very careful because these people are very, very hurt. They're going to be very suspicious. They don't believe anything until they see more facts and stuff, so I'll be very careful with her.
We begin tonight with a long-time unsolved case. 20 years after the murder of an Evansville woman, family members are still searching for answers.
Elizabeth was a great person. She had a huge heart, and she loved everyone.
Elizabeth Bannister was found stabbed to death inside her Washington Avenue apartment in Evansville in January of 2000. More than 20 years later now, Elizabeth's sister, Sarah, has been active on social media, creating a Facebook page, working to bring justice for her sister and peace of mind for her family.
Hey, Sarah, you there?
I'm here.
This is Phil Chalmers. I won't take much of your time. Is it okay if I record this interview?
Sure.
I sent you an email not too long ago telling you I wanted to talk to you about your sister, Elizabeth.
Yes.
On January 19th, 2000, the morning of January 20th, your sister was murdered in Evansville, Indiana.
Right.
I have some news for you. I found Elizabeth's killer. His name is William Clyde Gibson. He's already in prison. He will spend the rest of his life there, and he's on death row. This is what I do. Our goal is to bring closure for you.
Right. Like, you just want to know, why did you do it? What made you do it?
Right. Right.
Like, and you probably get the same answer, but it's unanswered questions that just live within you. And what I want is, if he is in fact the true person that murdered my sister, I want to see him face to face. I want to talk to him and get his insight of why he did what he did. And it doesn't matter what he says, why he did what he did, it's still wrong. However, I've always said, and I've always told the Lord, that I'm going to forgive this person. Whoever did it, I'm going to forgive them for what they did. The last haunting words of me and my sister together, I made a promise to her that I would somehow keep her alive, and maybe one day they'd find him and maybe they wouldn't.
So, Phil, what does this feel like right now after talking with Sarah?
Man, I feel for her. I can't relate to that. I've never had a relative murdered, but I can't imagine the pain you would have where it stays with you for the rest of your life. So for me, why I do what I do. There are families that are hurting, and we kind of forget about them when we do these investigations and we do these interviews. For me, it brings me into reality. My next step is doing what Sarah requested. I can't arrange a face-to-face meeting with Clyde and Sarah due to COVID. So I will ask Clyde if he'd like to speak to her on the phone. I think I can get him to agree to that. Hey, Sarah.
Yes.
What would you do if I could bring you two together on a phone call? I will set up that call for you. Would you ask him why? Would the goal be?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. There's many questions that I'd ask him for sure.
I want you to have that opportunity and over the phone. If you do, I'll start to begin to set that up.
All right. I will.
All right. You take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Hey, Clyde, how are you?
I'm all right.
Hey, listen, I'm here with Sarah. Sarah is Elizabeth's sister. And she wants to just ask you a couple questions and talk to you. We just want to make sure are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Hello there, Clyde.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, I'm angry, Clyde. I'm angry. I am very upset. What I want you to understand is 20 years of this I've had to live. okay, for 20 years, because she's all I had. It's right. The last thing that I had in my life.
And look, I can tell you this, I'm sorry you don't have your sister no more. I mean, I can't say that I'm sorry for the crimes I committed, because most of them, I'm really not. I don't have that in me, and I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. You know what I mean?
I guess I want to ask you, you know, why? I mean, if there's any way you can tell me why, like, why her?
Well, it wasn't nothing against her personally. I'm going to tell you, it's something that I haven't even really expressed to Phil or Wendy. My thing was, I got out of prison April 5th of 1999, right? And when I got out, I wanted revenge. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. I mean, it's not like I wasn't already doing it, but all it did was spike my anger toward everything, you know? And that's the reason my murder spiked so much, and from 99 through the 2000s and stuff.
Tell me how you... I mean, how did you have access to her home?
The best of my ability of remembering, I mean, I was high as I could be, you know, but the best thing I can remember is that I seen her standing on the road waving her arms and stuff. And at the time, I had a red 95 Chevrolet pickup. And I just remember pulling over and talking to her, and then we went out. I mean, it just happened, you know. I've got no excuses, you know what I mean? It's just one of them things that happened.
Well, did she make you mad, or just happened? He just decided to
It had nothing to do with that at all. It's like I said, it was just complete revenge. I mean, on the, you know, whoever that came in contact with me, it was just pure revenge. You know, if I thought they was in any way, you know, any kind of, any kind of animosity towards the male, you know, if I thought they had any of that in them, I just went off. And I mean, it didn't even have to be real, you know what I mean? It just had to exist in my head, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm trying to explain it the best I can, but I don't know if I'm doing any good.
I have lived with this pain for over 20 years. And I don't think you understand how much pain it brings somebody.
Yeah, I do. I do. Believe me, I do. Like I said, I understand, because I've lost people too.
You don't see me going around killing people because my sister was murdered, and kill everybody else because I'm mad, okay?
Right. You know, I mean, I realize I'm a piece of shit. I don't have no problem admitting it. You know, it's something that's true.
I'm going to tell you, she didn't deserve it. She was one person that did not deserve. And probably none of them did. But my sister did not deserve that. She did not. She was a great person and had a huge heart. She would give you the shirt off and her back.
Well, it's like I said, I am sorry that you don't have your sister. I will tell you that. I mean, and that's the best I can do. I mean, I'm glad I got a chance to speak with you anyway. I mean, and like I said, I'm not trying to fight the death penalty. I deserve what I got coming many times over. So, you know, if you get any satisfaction out of them executing me, I would be mad too. If it was my people, I would be mad.
With that being said, Kyle, I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me. I really do appreciate it. I would like to meet you in person.
Right.
I would like to talk face to face, if you are willing to do that. Not now, because COVID, but...
Right. I understand, and I have no problem with that either. I mean, I'm willing to do whatever. If it'll help you, I'll do it too. Okay? I mean, whatever you want.
Thanks for listening to Where the Bodies Are Buried. There is a lot more coming your way this season. Each episode will be better than the last. This podcast is produced by Grinning Dog and Audio Up. If you want an up-close and personal experience with serial killers that you can't get anywhere else, visit MyFriendsAreMonstersFanClub.com and join my fan club.